This is the March 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Brian Stark from the Andersons right here in Champaign County, Illinois. And Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or search Commodity Week out on your favorite podcast applications. Ellen Dearden from Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois. We'll start today with you. First, let's go through some of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture. They didn't really make very many changes. They dropped exports for wheat by, 15 million bushels. And the season's average price there was down a nickel. It's at $7.15 a bushel now. Corn, they didn't change anything other than the season's average cash price. That was down a nickel as well, now $4.75. And in the soybeans, they also didn't make any changes, but actually no changes at all. So those numbers were pretty straightforward. How did the marketplace take them?
Well, I think most everybody expects that these March domestic numbers are pretty routine. It would have been a surprise to have a large change on this March report. So I think the market looked at the numbers. We saw a little short covering going into the reports, and the market looked at the numbers and went, yeah, okay, let's go back to trading the way we've been trading, which has been basically bear spreads in the beans, which is a little disconcerting. But we're seeing just a little bit firmer action in the corn. Now, keep in mind that the wheat market was down sharply one day, up sharply 2 days now. So the corn's kind of the buffer, if you will, between for wheat traders by taking the other leg with corn. I thought the most interesting number that came out from USDA today was the fact that they only lowered Brazilian soybean production by 1 million metric tons to 155 million metric tons. The trade was looking for something around 3 million metric ton decline. And keep in mind that the private numbers are somewhere in that 150 to 151 million metric ton range. So USDA is still on the high side of things. And Argentina on the beans, they left that unchanged. However, for beans, they did raise the amount of beans that China would import by 3 million metric tons. They raised it to 105 million metric tons. So finally, we're acknowledging that import needs in China of beans are not as puny as you would think, given their hog herd reductions that have taken place this winter. On the corn side of things on the world, Argentina corn production went up 1 million metric tons to 56 million metric tons. Brazilian corn production unchanged from February. But these, you know, keep in mind that Argentina is going to have decent crops this year compared to last year when they were down 40 to 50% in both corn and bean production.
You were on the panels at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington earlier in the week on Tuesday. You were there for the day as well and listening, I suppose, intently to all the rest of the programming that went on. What did you find of interest that you took back with you?
Eric Snigrass always does a good job on his outlook for weather. And one of the things that he pointed out late as he discussed U.S. weather was that watch the European model, because it's been much more accurate for the summer weather than has the U.S. model. And he said right now that European model is wet for the summer. So I thought that was a good take-home piece. The man who really impressed me was Phil Ansell, who was from the Center for Sustainable Aviation. And we keep hearing about SAF and how that's going to change the way we grow beans and how many beans we grow. But I thought he went through, even for somebody with limited knowledge on chemistry, I would say, in general, but specifically talking about the hydrocarbon strings being made with an oily feedstuff versus the hydrocarbon strings that have to be put together for a starchy feedstuff. I thought that was something I hadn't heard explained quite that easily, and really was a super good point. You can understand why people have been talking about we're going to need so many more planted bean acres as we go to these SAF mandates. When you see that the yield on using an oily feedstuff is not very good to get SAF, I think he pointed out that it was about 20% SAF on using the oily product. However, if you're using a starchy product like ethanol is made from, that the yield for SAF was much higher, but the process itself was much more involved, and we're not there yet to be able to really put that process together and make it work. He also pointed out that a gallon, I think it was, he was quoting in gallons of SAF, is about four times the cost of regular aviation fuels. So right now, getting that price down would be extremely important. I thought he was a very good speaker and was able to focus it for people who know a little bit about SAF, but sure are lacking the bigger picture.
Now, that is a good preview. Thank you very much for that. And I'll be traveling on Monday and Tuesday. And you did pick the two pieces that I'm planning to run on those days. So the Eric Snodgrass piece on one of them, and then Phil Ansell, the director of the Center for Sustainable Aviation here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, will be on one of those 2 days as well. So we'll look forward to running those next week so that people can hear what went on, or at least part of what went on during the day there at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Again, thank you for being there. Now let's talk about what farmers are asking you as it relates to the marketplace. I know they're concerned. Are they concerned in a way that gives you options for them to provide enough income to make them, well, I don't know about satisfied, but solid, or feel better about their marketing plans?
The feel better, I think, is probably apt. Certainly satisfied is a stretch. You know, when you start laying out ideas for people and say, this is a bear market rally, so we need to use a bear market rally, we're not going to get back up to the highs. And in some of the comments are, well, how can we make this a go if we can't get Dees corn back to $5 and we can't get July corn back to close to $5? It's just not going to work. Well, the market doesn't care if it doesn't work for your operation. But when you start looking at using crop insurance as a little bit of a fail-safe on the revenue side of things, I think people will be a little bit more apt to act on rallies rather than to be paralyzed, which is more typical, particularly in this time frame. Keep in mind that we have our grain stocks report and the plantings report out March 28th. Now, that's a little earlier than normal due to the Easter holiday that week. So those reports are going to be big ones, and there'll be a lot of positioning in front of that report. Just the regular rotations are probably going to add bean acres, and particularly add bean acres in North and South Dakota, where they were heavily planted on corn last year. And they grow darn good soybeans, particularly when you look at all the sunshine they get in the summer compared to what Central Illinois has. So I think we need to think that there'll be more bean acres in that area, but we may lose bean acres to milo or to cotton as we go into the Mid-South this year. So it'll be interesting to see. Corn acres, you know, were so high last year, I think it's a fair assumption that we'll lose a few corn acres. But the market's really trying to hold on with ideas that maybe December corn will get up close to $4.85 or $4.95, not quite the $5. And I think you've got to be pulling the trigger. And I am a big proponent of leaving the basis open if you can at this stage of the game.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I spoke with her earlier today, not long after USDA released its WASDE report for the month of March. And then I called and talked with Brian Stark of the Andersons. He's in Champaign County, Illinois, and asked him to begin with to give me a broader context view of the corn and soybeans that are still yet to be marketed in the United States.
I think the producer in general is no more than 50% sold on his old crop corn. I think that's the one commodity he has been reluctant to sell. I think on the bean front, bean prices have hovered a little bit better for cash flow reasons. I think that's been the general consensus. Guys moved beans earlier in the year to generate cash, less volume needed to generate the same amount of dollars. So we're estimating somewhere around 60% sold on old crop soybeans. So nonetheless, the producer still has a lot of old crop to market. And obviously, given the last week or so since the end of February, I guess the last 10 days, have established maybe a short-term bottom. We've seen a little bit of an uptick in selling here in the last week as the farmers rewarded a market that has seemingly been in a downtrend since the holidays and we've turned the new year.
I think that the last time I spoke with you for the Commodity Week program, we were discussing what would happen in latter part of March and April as there might be an upswing in the marketplace. And you were concerned, if I remember correctly, that there were not only the unpriced bushels that were completely unpriced, but the priced later bushels that still had to come into the market, that all would be putting pressure on the basis levels. Are you still in that same boat?
Yeah, I think so. I think the producer obviously has been rewarding the market in a methodical way as the funds have decided to cover some of their position, yet we're still seeing a little bit of a recovery, maybe more buying from the funds than farmers selling. I do think, though, that the amount of corn still sitting on farm, along with maybe some of the futures pressure you may see from the price later grain that's already moved, can certainly keep a lid on where futures and or basis can go. I think obviously the bushels on the farm have more of an impact on the basis side. And so that's why I think the grower needs to actively look at opportunities this spring, not necessarily locking in delivery terms during planting when we know the producer is focused on moving or planting his crop, but using that opportunity to book forward movement that he knows he's going to have to do post-planting in June, July, and August, where the market could feel soft, barring no major crop issues as we go through the planting early growing season, where, you know, the market knows with limited demand, this supply has to move. And I think that is a concern for sure here over the next 90 days or so.
That really means they have to separate out old and new crop thinking, I would suppose, simply yeah. Because if there are reasons that the new crop should rally, you're suggesting that there's still plenty of old crop around.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the market is in a carry structure. We've got a projected 2.1 billion plus crop. So any type of a weather premium that gets built in the market, it's not going to be like we've seen the last 3, 4, 5 years where we had a tight supply, strong demand. The market was inverted. And so when the funds came in to buy the market, it was in the front months. I think you're going to see more of a push towards rallying a new crop. So you're absolutely right. The separation has to be, any type of upward swing is going to be focused to new crop values. And so therefore, in order to focus on opportunities out there, we've got to figure out where the best late plans are for this excessive old crop that is certainly needed to be marketed in a big way yet.
You're not suggesting, nor am I suppose, that they ignore new crop, just that they have to understand both the old and new crop dynamics and supply-demand issues.
Correct. I'm not suggesting that they simply ignore new crop. I think that's generally been the better focal point when the producer is frustrated with, you know, the lack of maybe where he wants to sell price level wise and old. We've certainly turned the focus towards looking at new crop strategies, because I think that's where you can start to whittle away rather than being long both crops or a portion of both crops. Sell the value where you can potentially lock in a profit. And what I'm saying is, I think that opportunity might be a little more apparent on the new crop side if we get buying during a weather premium that gets put in the market for whatever reason, versus it may be harder for the old crop to rally just as much. So it becomes a little bit more of a challenge on when to make those decisions, but certainly have to understand the dynamics are different. And I think there's going to be a bigger sense of urgency during that springtime, when movement tends to slow down, when the grower goes to the field, to take advantage of any type of board rally and or basis rally to lock in some sales on the remaining old crop bushels.
On the supply and demand table, the only change USDA made for corn was to lower the season's average cash price by 5 cents for the old crop to $4.75. Do you think that those export ethanol and feed usage residual are still good numbers?
I do. You know, I think on the export side, that could be the one number that could certainly come down. Obviously, we've seen on the bean side specifically, we're undercut from a price perspective, and even on wheat, with Russia continuing to lower their prices on the world. Corn certainly could see a decrease along the way from a demand standpoint, given we haven't been as price competitive. We are today, but obviously we know that the South American, the Brazilian second corn crop, Safrinha crop, is off to a fast planting start. So there may be a shorter window, and that could have some change there. But the other numbers, I think, feel okay today. I don't see the old crop carryout growing a lot, which, again, goes back to my earlier point that any type of weather premium is probably going to be focused in new crop values once we get into the growing season.
At the end of this month, and we've talked about this a couple of times already, the prospective plantings and grain stocks figures will be due out. I want to know what you think farmers will be telling USDA, and it really is a farmer survey, some 70 to 80,000 of them, responding to what crops are you planning to put in the ground this year, and that's how that prospective plantings report is made up. And then if you think there will be any surprises in the grain stocks numbers.
Yeah, I think from a plantings perspective, I think the interesting question, and most analysts and we talk internally and externally with farmers, think that corn acres are going to be down. I think the 90 to 91 million acreage number is probably pretty accurate with an equal increase in beans. What we've discovered, though, in recent conversations, or where I think that could be a potential surprise, is that some of the major states in the Corn Belt, the I states, were not seeing necessarily as much switching to beans as what you would think with the lower price economics on the corn front. We do agree you're going to see in the outlying, so in the Northwest and the Great Plains, and even in the Southeast, we're seeing some subtraction, certainly going to be less corn acres. The question may be, where it could be a surprise, is that we may not see as big a cut. Maybe it's 92 versus 90 or 91, because some of the central part of the Corn Belt actually didn't switch as much. So I think today we're kind of in the 90, 91 million camp, but wouldn't be surprised if it's not as big a cut when March 31 comes out. I think weather, as always, will have something to say about that as we go through the planting season. From a stocks perspective, I certainly think that's always the wild card. And I think today that You could see a greater stocks number with weaker demand because of the feed usage side. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if we stay on pace. So that one's a little harder to peg. I feel better about, you know, the bias on what we're going to see from the acreage, and the stocks always is a wild card.
Yeah, thank you much, Brian.
All right, thank you, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons. Sherman Newland is with us today as well. He's in Hudsonville, Illinois, and with Risk Management Commodity. Sherman is a farmer. Thank you, Sherman, for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been up to with your operation? It's been warm and a little dry. Have you been scratching the earth?
Yeah, yes, actually we have. Which is, you know, odd for this early. I mean, we typically don't get in this early, but yeah, we worked a little bit of ground, but we've been applying ammonia, and we're probably, you know, 2/3 done with getting all our spring ammonia applied. And there's been several rigs running here this past week until this rain here lately just kind of knocked us out. But again, we're still not getting what they were calling for. You know, they're saying 1.3 inches or something like that. We might have 1/2 inch is all we've gotten. So not going to keep us out too much longer.
But just so folks know, spring ammonia would be normal.
Yeah.
That you would not be putting fall ammonia on as far south as
correct.
You are in the state of Illinois. So you're doing some field work. I guess offhand, what did you think of the WASDE report when it was released today?
Ho-hum, nothing burger. I mean, honestly, I mean, the only thing that really changed, which wasn't what everybody was hoping for, was only dropped the Brazil soybean production 1 million metric ton, which, you know, I think most were thinking a little bit more than that for sure. I know some of the private guys are down, you know, in that 145 to 150. So dropping it that little didn't really, you know, wasn't what folks were looking for, but, you know, the market's reacting positive to it. So if you, you know, you get something that's halfway neutral to bearish and the markets react positively to it, that's a good thing.
Let's turn your attention to a decision at hand. Of course, Risk Management Commodities works in the crop insurance area. I'm wondering how you're approaching that today, and if it differs very much from previous years. I kind of think this does, based on the Arkin PLC decision, and that producers are having to think more about both the crop insurance and whether they're using SEO, ECO, to help lower the cost potentially, and that has an ARC PLC function within it. How are you approaching that with producers, and how much variability this year is there compared to previous years?
I mean, it again, yes, you're right. It does vary from year to year, and guys are still trying to figure out which one, what they're wanting to do. I mean, it looks like, you know, PLC's probably a little bit better fit if you think prices are going to go quite a bit lower for corn on that side of it. And then ARC County, maybe for soybeans, is possibly the way. If you do the PLC for corn, you can do that, you know, that buy up of extra protection. So, you know, I don't know, guys are looking at it, but we haven't been overwhelmed with, you know, that particular questions or decision making on which way to go. I mean, because we, you know, nobody knows where the price is going to end up. Nobody really knows where yields are really going to end up at the end of the day. And most are hoping that we don't have to fall back and count on the government for some, you know, payment on this. So
then moving away from that, just directly into what producers should, maybe can do. We'll start with old crop corn. There will be a lot of that still around. Mm-hmm. More soybeans around, I think, than we have talked about. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like after talking to some elevator managers that maybe a third of the crop for both is still yet to be priced.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's still quite a bit of both out there that needs to be sold for old crop. I do think a lot of it did get sold here because a lot of folks had basis contracts that went out here, you know, at the 1st of March timeframe. So a lot of that selling, you know, kind of put a low in the market. You know, we broke below $4 in March corn, and now we've rallied, you know, what, 25, 30 plus cents since then. So what do guys do? What do producers do? I think if you haven't sold yet, you know, and you're wanting to make some sales, I think you're going to have an opportunity here because there's, you know, the funds seem to be starting to cover their positions, you know, and maybe we can rally this market a little bit more before we get to this planning and intentions report. But by that time frame, I would be looking to make some, you know, get stuff moved because you don't know what these acres numbers are going to look like. going forward.
Yeah, so the prospective plantings report really is the next big target, along with that grain stocks report that comes out at the end of the month. You're suggesting that we really don't know what those numbers will look like. In your area, do you think farmers, as they're thinking about what to plant, or were making decisions last fall, did they plant more wheat acres is a first question. And do you suppose they will put in more soybean acres, or across the whole of the United States, and probably has to do with cotton acres as well?
Right, yeah. Well, we hope more cotton acres get planted in the South. I'm in Southern Illinois, but I'm not that far south to plant anything, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. I think around here, a lot of guys are still 50-50 rotation. I mean, they're definitely thinking about cutting back, you know, thought about cutting back on some corn acres. Wheat acres, I think, maybe a little bit less around here, especially. I mean, we didn't plant any wheat this year. That's probably the first time in 13 years we didn't plant any wheat last fall. And the way prices are, I'm kind of glad we didn't. But nationwide, everybody's expecting fewer corn acres. Will we be, below that 92 million by much, or if any at all? I honestly don't know. I do think the guys in the north are going to maybe look at more edible beans, in that type of situation, or grain sorghum out west because of dry weather. So I do think corn acres will be down, but will it be enough to move the needle substantially? I have my doubts.
What are you watching in particular? Is it something on the usage side, for instance, exports or ethanol or feed grains or something else?
Ethanol is supposed to be getting picked up. Usage is going to pick up. We really need the sustainable aviation fuel to get going. It doesn't sound like that's really starting off very well for ethanol right now with what they're trying to do with the GREET situation. So I don't know. We need that as farmers to keep, usage up for the corn crop. Because if we keep growing this big crop, we're just going to keep ending up with bigger carryouts, obviously. But that seems to be the one thing that I would like to see get going is the SAF going. But, here we are. We got to do carbon sequestration to get the CI scores down for the ethanol, right? And that takes a long time. That's a long process of getting that done. So it's all a big picture going forward for that.
Hey, thank you much.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
Sherman Newland is with Risk Management Commodities. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org, willag.org, or search Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report out in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden of AgriView. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. March has started about as mild as February was. Temperatures this week range from the low 40s in northern Illinois to the mid-50s in southern Illinois, between 10 and 16 degrees above normal. We're still waiting on the official state numbers for February and climatological winter, but we can say that last month was the warmest February on record in Chicago, Rockford, Moline, and Peoria. Winter as a whole was also the warmest on record in Rockford and the warmest in the last 80 to 90 years in Chicago, Peoria, Moline, and in many places north of I-72. 4-inch bare soil temperatures are currently running about 8 to 10 degrees above normal because of our mild weather, and many perennials are 15 to 30 days ahead of the spring phenology. Our weather pattern switched from very dry in February to more active in the last few days. More rain is falling as I record this, and in total, most of the state is expected to pick up another half to maybe a full inch of rain by the end of the weekend. While not conducive to very early field work, the moisture is needed to help recharge deeper layer soils and streams, especially in southern and western Illinois. The U.S. Drought Monitor's expanded moderate drought in the St. Louis Metro East area this week in response to the recent dryness. Looking Looking ahead, it's steady as she goes with mild weather next week. After a brief drop this weekend, we'll see temperatures back in the 50s and 60s next week, and a bit drier next week, too. The week two outlooks still show above normal temperatures for the middle part of the month, and slightly higher chances of wetter conditions returning then. Still, there isn't much indication of our mild weather stretch will end anytime soon. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.